From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. General Jack Keane's coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're getting more and more reports that Iran is close to hitting Israel. We evidently were in contact with Israel, with Iranian official through our back channels and let them know we're there. Should you try something, what we would do, not sure. Did we actually green light the hit that killed their commanders in Damascus? Not sure they even ask us at this point, especially with the anti-Israel flavor coming out of the White House. And Lara Trump is standing by, you know, as she is the co-chair of the RNC now. So we have a lot to discuss, including today. It's kind of interesting at the White House, Filipino president, along with the prime minister of Japan and the president. I mean, this is a conglomeration put together, a triumvirate to counter China. Big three time.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%. We're in a situation where we're better situated than we were when we took office, where inflation was skyrocketing. And we have a plan to deal with it.
That, by the way, totally not true. Yesterday at the Rose Garden, him saying that skyrocketing inflation, reality hits the White House as a collapsed border and rising inflation can't be ignored. But blaming President Trump will not work. How Joe's attacking both shows what he could have been doing all along.
Number two.
I also explained that he is the Republican leader. That he is the leader of the opposition party against the Biden administration, and we expect him to lead that way, not to pass the Biden administration's agenda.
Really? Marjorie Taylor Greene getting on the same page. Speaker Johnson, the former president, and Marjorie Taylor Greene better get on the same page when it comes to FISA, Ukraine aid, and abortion, quick, and why ousting the speaker will be the stupidest thing any party has ever done since they ousted the speaker last time.
Number one.
Yeah, they do very well. They're closed on Sunday.
The Lord's chicken.
That's the Lord's chicken. You're right. It's good chicken, too.
2024, perfect contrast in plans and strategies between Biden and Trump. While the press had a star-studded affair at the White House with Bezos and De Niro and company, well, the former president was in Atlanta at a Chick-fil-A winning over workers while they work. In the back of his mind, knowing his trial starts Monday with so much tied onto his fate in November. And it's just one of what could be four, or it could be the one and only. Lara Trump can't be bothered by that. She's got money to raise, and she's got Republicans to put into elected office. Lara, welcome.
Good morning. Great to be with you, Brian.
I was with Eric yesterday. He says your man is to still drop the kids off at school and run the RNC. A 4 and 6-year-old, this is not going to be easy.
Yeah, well, you know what? You do what you got to do. And listen, no one ever said this would be easy to anyone with the last name Trump, Ryan, if we're being honest. But, you know, I think you talk about my kids who are 4 and 6 years old. Yeah, I'm doing this for them. I'm doing this because, quite frankly, this is a must-win election. And it's not even just about right now. It's about what kind of country are we ultimately leaving to the next generation of Americans. And truly, you know, you can contrast two presidencies right now, Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. Things are 180 degrees in the other direction right now than when Donald Trump was in office. And whether it's the economy, whether it's our standing on the world stage, whether it's our safety and security, on every possible front, things have gotten worse in this country. And I believe if we continue on this path and on this trajectory, we are not going to have the same America left on the other side of it. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting 6.5 months, but I'll tell you what, we're working hard. We've got our heads down. We're facing forward, and we know exactly what we need to do to win this.
Well, a couple of things come to fruition. Number one, just a personal question. When did you realize that you could do this, that you wanted to do this, and then most of all, that you were going to do it? Like, at what point were you looking at the RNC and thought, I could do that?
Well, listen, you may know I have a very influential father-in-law, and sometimes when he calls you, even if you say, I don't know if this is the right space for me, he will tell you, I think it is. And so he was very passionate about me in this position, and truly, I mean, we had started having conversations a few months ago about it, and look, I want to be of the highest and best use, and I want to do whatever I can mm-hmm. to ensure that we have victory on November 5th. It was very clear to me a couple months ago that this would be the position in which I could do the most good and hopefully help the most. And so here I am as the co-chair of the RNC. Had you asked me a year ago, Brian, if I ever thought it would be here, I probably would have told you absolutely not. But, you know, here we are. And I think the proof is in the pudding. Look, we've had some incredible fundraising. You've seen a lot of changes at the RNC. I think the get out the vote effort, which is our number one priority, of course, is already taken care of with Donald Trump as the nominee. And now it is our job at the RNC to protect that vote and ensure voter integrity and election integrity. It is the most important thing that we are focusing on right now. So while I may not have ever thought I would be in a position like this, you know, life is interesting and you got to take things as they come. And I am so honored and so proud to have this role right now.
Well, it's certainly going to be fascinating. It's going to be the longest run. We haven't had two presidents going at each other since Grover Cleveland. It's been everything's going to be unprecedented, including the court cases that start on Monday. But that has really nothing to do with you. You really can't control it, even though you have a vested interest in it. So I want you to hear what President Biden said yesterday, because he got a news that inflation was going in the wrong direction, and that was up, which is bad news for everyone. And here's what he had to say about the economy and what he said is the problem. Here it is. Cut five.
Okay. Third, next question. Who do I call on next? Hang on a second. I got my list here. Hang on. I apologize.
Well,
really,
I do stand by
my prediction that before the year is out, there'll be a rate cut. This may delay it a month or so. I'm not sure of that. We don't know what the Fed is going to do for certain. But look, we have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%. We're in a situation where we're better situated than we were when we took office, where inflation was skyrocketing. And we have a plan to deal with it.
So, I mean, that's just falsity. I mean, the inflation was at 1.8% when he took over. From your perspective, like, how do you push back on that, or you just leave it to the former president to do that?
Well, first of all, man, is anyone inspired by what they just heard? That's the president of the United States. I was more interested in the bird chirping in the background than what this guy was actually saying. That in and of itself is a problem. But yes, the absolute falsities and blatant lies that Joe Biden just told right there is very problematic. And I think the issue they have, Brian, is you can only lie so much to people before people start to realize something is wrong. Something is not actually connecting for me, because while Joe Biden is trying to claim that, as you just pointed out, inflation was sky high when he took office, it wasn't. It was incredibly low, almost historically low in the United States of America. And you can tell people things are getting better, but when you go to the grocery store and eggs are up 50% and, you know, everything you're buying from, you know, baby food to pet food to fuel for your car to electricity, rent, your life is more expensive. I think we found out the CPI numbers yesterday, and the entire level as a whole, people's lives are nearly 20% more expensive right now than they were when Joe Biden took office. So you can't talk your way out of this. And we have to make sure at the RNC, and of course from the perspective of Donald Trump, that we talk about this with people. Joe Biden doesn't have a plan. That's the difference. He doesn't actually understand this stuff. Nobody even knows if he really knows where he is most of the time, let alone has a handle on the economy and how to actually bring these inflation numbers down. When Donald Trump was in office, we were energy independent. We were nearly a net energy exporter. That was huge for America. That naturally was going to bring down the cost of everything, obviously, including the fuel for our vehicles and to run our lives here in America. But Joe Biden has no clue what he's talking about. No one is inspired by him. They understand that their life has gotten harder since he took office, and it is a very easy comparison between these two men, their presidencies, and what they're offering the American people. And that is our job at the RNC, to make that comparison every day from now until November 5th.
So the one thing you have to do, and I think you know this, because there's independents, undecideds, and there's Republicans. Some Republicans are, you know, they're anti-Trumpers. There's Liz Cheney's out there. There's others that ran against you. Some like Vivek Ramaswamy, no problem. They're aboard. Governor DeSantis say he's going to have fundraisers for President Trump. That came out yesterday. Were you aware of that?
I wasn't aware of the fundraisers he's going to have. But look, we know that he's on the team because I think he understands as well what's at stake right now. And while he may have been, you know, an opponent in the primaries, he cares about this country. And I think he understands right. that Donald Trump truly is the only way forward. So we're honored to have it. We're very excited to hear that. We'll take them all.
Because he was tight with your family, right? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah. we all campaigned for Governor DeSantis back whenever he first yeah. became governor of Florida. And so we're excited to have him on the team. I think you look at who we actually have on our team and on our side of the aisle, and whether you're talking about the general support, whether you're talking about a possible VP pick for my father-in-law, the good news is we have a deep bench and we have really incredible mm-hmm. people. You can't look at the other side, Brian, and say the same thing. So they have to pull out the big guns. You saw the fundraiser. It took three presidents to raise $26 million alongside celebrities like Lizzo, like Anna Wintour, like Stephen Colbert. And we doubled that with one man, one president, mm-hmm. Donald Trump, last weekend. It speaks volumes about what is going on in this country right. and I think where people are in this country right now.
Laura, I want you to hear this. Chris Sununu, a surrogate for Nikki Haley, was on with me on Monday or Tuesday of this week. He kind of surprised me with this. He's on board. Listen.
Trump's going to be successful because of Trump, not because someone endorses him, right? He's his own.
But does he need Nikki Haley's people? Does he need Nikki Haley?
No. No, he doesn't need Nikki so much. I mean, Nikki can do what she wants. She's independent. She's smart. But most of Nikki's voters are going to come over. I mean, they really are, because it's effectively a two-party system. This third-party stuff isn't going anywhere. And if you tend to lean Republican and you choose not to vote, you're voting for the Democrats. Mathematically, that's how it works. You're giving the Democrats what they want. So folks are going to come out and understand that these issues are real, they're serious. And I think at the end of the day, you know, a lot of the time heals a lot of stuff, and there's going to be a lot of time between now and November.
So I know Eric was surprised by that. He didn't know about it. Are you?
Well, listen, I'm never surprised whenever people make the right decision. And that is the right the right decision, Brian, for the future of this country, because you really cannot continue on a path with an open border, you know, where we have millions of people pouring into this country, not paying into our system. Every state now is a border state. The fentanyl coming through our southern border, killing the youth in this country by 100,000 plus a year. We're on the verge of World War III. People can't afford their lives right now. It is a mess. And if we continue down this path, and if we allow the communist tactics mm-hmm. that have been employed against my father-in-law, the Republican nominee for president, all of these crazy, crazy situations in court he has to deal with right now, which are very clearly designed to be election interference. If that is successful and we're allowing that to happen, we really are never going to be the same country again. And so we're happy when people make the right decisions. So thank you to Chris Sununu.
So Wall Street Journal has you guys up. Reuters and Ipsos does not. They have you trailing in the national poll. And it's a 600,000 people's samples. These are just some of the – they have tightened up over the last few weeks. How do you plan to address that?
Well, we have a lot of time between now and when a voting starts. And, you know, it's election season now. I think that's one thing we're really focused on at the RNC. It's not just one day of voting. We have to start talking to people about voting early, voting by mail. However you can vote and as early as you can vote, we want you to vote because, quite frankly, you don't know what happens. You don't know about the weather. You don't know about your life circumstances. Things happen. We want you to bank your vote and then take somebody with you every day up until election day to vote this coming election season. But look, I think it's what I said in the beginning, which is it is a very easy comparison. We have to get people to remember life under Donald Trump. And it's not about, Brian, whether or not you agreed with every tweet he posted, mm-hmm. whether or not you really like his personality. It's about your future. It's about the future of your children, your grandchildren, and America as a whole. We really cannot continue to live under Joe Biden as president and think that we are going to be a successful country. We are slipping in our standing on the world stage. Don't kid yourself. China is chomping at the bit to usurp us as the superpower of the world right now. And when you have weak leadership at the top in the United States of America, it destabilizes the entire world. That's what we're seeing happen. Mm-hmm. And so we have to remind people what is at stake. We have to make that comparison. And I truly believe You saw in Atlanta yesterday the warm reception that my father-in-law got at a Chick-fil-A. That's the kind of thing people want to see. They want somebody who's coming out and actually talking with them and listening to them, not talking to them and fumbling around like Joe Biden often does. So we're going to be seeing a lot more of that.
Well, we'll see. And just lastly, right now they got about twice as much cash in hand than you do, even though you've had two big fundraisers, one in Atlanta, one in Orlando, three, I guess, and then one in Palm Beach. Do you think this one is when we get to October, it'll be a flat-footed tie in money raised?
Well, you have to think back to 2016, and Hillary Clinton, I think, outraised us by like 5-1 in that race, and ultimately Donald Trump won. Money is great because it allows you to have a strong ground game. It allows you to advertise. It allows you to do the things that you need and that are very helpful to win elections. But the thing that's going to win this election for us, I think, is Donald Trump himself. I think he's the secret weapon. He's all we ultimately need. But we are working hard. We are fundraising. Since I took over with Michael Whatley at the RNC, we have raised $100 million. 98% of that money is in under $200 increments. Our average donation is $54. It tells you that the American people are behind this man. They're inspired. They're encouraged. They want their country back. They know who can give it to them. It's Donald Trump. And we're going to beat that drum all the way to November 5th.
All right, Larry Trump's kid's got to get to school, and then you have the RNC to run. So you have a full agenda, and you got to be a great wife to Eric. So besides that,
Brian. Yeah. Huh?
It's a lot.
Got a lot to do.
Yep. Larry, thanks so much. I hope to talk to you again.
You're the best. Thank you.
1-866-408-7669. That's the inside story on the RNC and President Trump's chances of putting together an organization that's going to pull out a victory and put him back in the Oval Office. Your thoughts next, and then General Jack Keane on the problem with not getting aid to Ukraine. Every minute matters. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This has been a great American franchise.
It is. It's a great franchise. The owner is a great man who is a member of one of my clubs, and he's fantastic. And, they do very well. They're closed on Sunday.
The Lord's Chicken.
That's the Lord's Chicken. You're right. It's good chicken, too.
Chick-fil-A is where the president stopped yesterday arbitrarily. Did not know how he'd be received. There was no scout team. But when he walked in and said, give me 30 milkshakes and a bunch of burgers, everybody wanted to take pictures. He had fun with them, ad-libbed. The Secret Service must not have loved it because it's unscripted and they weren't able to secure it that I know of. And he went in and just talks to people. And if you want to relate to people, go to fast food places, go to grocery stores, and then hear it. You know, if you have a good staff, you might get people to give you an honest answer to talk about what the needs were. Hey, you know what? This is not enough, or this is what I do. How's it working here? It is great. You get an understanding of what it likes in Atlanta. And then you go and you do your fundraiser. Rich people give you money. But most of all, you want to get that money to get into office to help those people at Chick-fil-A. That's what a true politician does. You do it to help people. Get in a position of power and then fan out the power.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, I'm fearful it's been mischaracterized, which it has been. It's not really a Ukraine aid bill, Brett. It is really focused on our ability to produce weapons for our own country. 60% of this bill goes directly into the industrial base of America, which is dramatically atrophied in terms of our ability to produce weapons. Everything from submarines to 155-millimeter howitzers. That's why I'm a strong supporter of that bill.
That is Dan Crenshaw. It's not Dan Crenshaw. That is Dan Sullivan, a veteran himself, Alaska senator, weighing in desperate to get aid to Ukraine because it means we will save money. The money that we're going to need to rearm NATO and to fortify NATO with our troops, if Ukraine falls, is going to just quadruple what we're asking, what the Ukrainians are asking for right now to fight. General Jack Keane has been also advocating to get Ukraine what they need to be successful. General, you must be very frustrated right now.
Oh, yeah. Something that was pretty self-evident over a year or so ago, the need to fund Ukraine and obviously keep them as an independent country so Russia couldn't dominate them and move on to expansion into other countries. It seems so obvious and self-evident. And then we get into a debate over why are we protecting the border between Ukraine and Russia when we should be protecting our own border. And my God, I mean, we should be able to do both of these things. And that's an oversimplification of the issue, to say the least. But we have an open border because of an administration's policy. That is their policy. And it's likely not going to that policy is not likely going to change unless the administration is willing to change it or the people are willing to change the administration. It's that simple. But the United States is a global power, and to think that we would surrender Ukraine to the Russians and give them the appetite to go further with that is significant. And also what it means to the rest of the world, Brian. I mean, we have the Japanese leader here visiting the White House on a state visit, and he's the third largest donor to Ukraine behind the United States and the United Kingdom. And he is all the way out in the Pacific. Why is he doing that? Because he sees that if Russia wins in Ukraine, so does China. And China is going to go to war in the Indo-Pacific region if it believes that the will of the United States is so weakened that they would not defend Ukraine and the Europeans as well. He sees those two things as being related. And that is a strategic view of what is actually happening. And it's regrettable that others can't see it as clearly as he can see it.
Well, put it this way. We have this great – we had Afghanistan, which we're working with NATO in. We just left. We didn't even tell NATO. They had to find out after the fact. They weren't even in on the decision. And now we're in Ukraine. We said we're going to back them up, whatever it takes. Now we can't get them any arms. What does that say? And then when it comes to Israel – and when it comes to Hamas reporting that civilians have died and the world turning on Israel, we turn on Israel. So, here is President Biden yesterday, cut 11.
You're now saying that Benjamin Netanyahu is making a mistake in Gaza. What are you willing to do to make him change his strategy? And would you consider conditioning military aid to Israel?
I have been very blunt and straightforward with the Prime Minister, as well as his war cabinet, as well as the cabinet. And the fact of the matter is that Bibi and I had a long discussion. He agreed to do several things that related to, number one, getting more aid, both food and medicine, into Gaza, and reducing significantly the attempts, the civilian casualties in any action taken in the region. And thus far, and it's tied to the hostages.
So, I mean, this guy seems like he's a neutral arbitrator. Why don't we start every sentence with the only reason that the Israelis are in Gaza is because of Hamas, and they're hiding underground, leaving the Palestinian people as human shields?
Yeah, I mean, it's really quite appalling. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, to be quite clear about it, Israel has three war aims. And President Biden disagrees now with all three war aims. The first is hostage release. Rescue is limited, certainly. But what President Biden is now saying is rejecting Netanyahu's policy, which is to put significant military pressure on Hamas so that they would be forced to negotiate the release of the hostages. Biden doesn't want that military pressure. What he's insisting on is an immediate ceasefire with no conditions and then negotiate the release of the hostages, which gives all the leverage to Hamas. The reason why there's not a ceasefire, which Netanyahu has had on the table for weeks, a six-week ceasefire with humanitarian assistance and obviously a hostage release, is because Hamas's hands continues to be strengthened by the President of the United States. The second objective is the destruction of Hamas, both militarily and as a political entity. Biden's policy now is the cost of achieving that end is too great because of the civilian casualties, and he's no longer supporting it. And then the third war aim that Israel has that doesn't state it publicly is to deter Iran aggressively. Well, the Biden administration has never been willing to confront Iran right from the outset. They try to ignore the fact that Iran has operationalized all of its proxies in concert and in support of the Hamas's land invasion of Israel, which certainly they approved. They helped prepare Hamas for it. We know that. And they helped train some of them in there in Iran for it. And we refuse to hold Iran accountable the way the Netanyahu wants to hold them accountable. So we have a complete break with Israel that is unprecedented. Now, two things that are good about this still. The mill-to-mill relationship is solid, and you see the CENTCOM commander responsible for U.S. troops in the region in Israel to this today. The intelligence services are sharing information the way they always have. So those two entities are functioning. They're on the same page. But politically and diplomatically, there is a serious breach there between this administration and Israel, which is really unfortunate.
So right now we understand that Iran wants pledges retaliation for the killing of their commanders in Damascus, which is one was in charge of getting weapons into Hezbollah. So we took them out. They're a little freaked out by how great the intelligence was for Israel. But now we hear that Iran might be ready to attack, not through proxies, with their own rockets or drones into Israel. Is that a likely scenario, General Jackeen?
It's certainly possible that they do that. I mean, most times they don't because, the Iranians do not want direct retaliation against their capabilities. Where Iran spends all of its money is really on the offensive nature of their proxies to make certain that they're well-armed. In terms of defending themselves, they have a very weak air force and navy with little capability. Their land forces, most of their money is really spent on offensive missiles and drones. Iran really believes that the way to protect itself is to use proxies, offensive operations that they do, and then the countries that are threatened by them will attack the proxies and not them. That has been their strategy for years. And by and large, this strategy works. Look at this administration. I know that through sources that we have recommended militarily over 100 or so targets inside Iran with limited military attacks to take down IRGC capabilities and assets that they have, so that they would stop supporting the proxies offensively. In other words, you say, listen, we're going to continue these attacks against you unless you stop and shut down your proxies. We've been unwilling to do any of that. So what I see happening here is certainly they could do that, but they may choose what they normally choose, and that is to use their proxies to conduct some kind of operation. So our audience understands most of the time that Israel has dealt with Iran, usually through covert operations, the Natanz nuclear facility in 2020, that they blew up the using covert espionage, the centrifuge capability, killing nuclear scientists and military leaders. There's never been any response from Iran to any of that. So I think Israel really has the upper hand in this, and threatening direct retaliation against Iran, they'll listen to that and take counsel of it. We'll see what happens.
I guess strength is the thing that they don't like. When you show weakness, that's when they seem to get aggressive. So Benjamin Netanyahu says, we've picked a day for a Rafah invasion. There is no way they can't go into Rafah. If Sinwar, the bin Laden of this Hamas operation October 7th, survives, he wins. So Israel knows that. They know that Hezbollah has got to be dealt with, and they know that Iran's got to be dealt with. So if they go in to Rafah, even though we told them not to, what changes the next day?
Yeah, I mean, what Biden has actually said to Netanyahu, at least by implication, and not supporting that operation, that he is accepting then the survival of Hamas fighting organizations, the survival of Hamas's leadership, as a political entity as well, and to almost guarantee that Israel would be reattacked after Hamas can regroup and reorganize. That's what he's actually accepting. That's what's so stunning about this. The security of Israel is at stake here. It's an existential threat to diminish the population of Israel by making it so insecure for people to live there that they choose to live someplace else. That's what this is really about. This is a small population of 7 million Jews inside of Israel, and their security situation was unbelievably violated on October the 7th. And certainly it's a precarious situation for them if Hamas is not defeated. But that is what this administration is actually underwriting. I mean, this is our ally. It's extraordinary statement on the part of the president in what he's saying here.
General Jack Keane with us. Last question. I saw General, it looks like FBI Director Wray will be speaking today, but in a series of statements, I thought this was significant. Maybe you want to put it in context. He said, looking back over my career in law enforcement, I'd be hard-pressed to think of any time with so many threats to our public safety and national security were so elevated all at once. But that is the case as I sit here today. That is not a point when we can let go. And they're talking about surveillance techniques, the 702, as well as FISA being re-upped. Do you think he's overstating this? Because you do the Institute of Study of War. You talk about threats overseas. But what about the threat here at home?
No, I think he's absolutely right. I mean, what China is doing alone is the most comprehensive penetration of American society in our history. Largely, you know, through cyber espionage, cyber surveillance. I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary what they're doing. And certainly with an open border, as it has been for a number of years now, the potential for violence inside the United States by our adversaries is real. And I mean, the FBI director has been sounding the alarm, as you know, for a number of years now, and it doesn't seem to stick on the wall, certainly in terms of the administration making any positive change in their policies to make America secure once again, because we're not.
General Keane, thanks so much. I wish you weren't so busy, but the world is keeping you very busy. Thanks so much, General.
Yeah, great talking to Brian, you and your audience.
Yep.
Thank you.
You help us out a lot, always. Thank you. When we come back, it's your turn. Weigh in, laid out a lot. We see the two different campaigns. We see a very tight race. We also see two things that are in front of Congress. Are we going to rotate speakers again? Is Marjorie Taylor Greene just going to bring us chaos? Are we going to greenlight some aid? Are we going to renew FISA? There are some substantial things going on in the House right now. And the last thing you need is a new speaker. All right. You may not like rules, but you just can't blow up leaders on your own team. I didn't think. Maybe I have a lot to learn. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The entire thing is stuck right now. The entire reform process is stuck. So my amendment in particular... yeah, would simply add that category to FISA. Right now, we cannot actually use FISA to target a lot of the affiliates of cartels, you know, the bankers, the accountants, the drug runners, all of the people that actually make the business possible. You cannot, and these are foreigners in foreign countries, by the way. These are not Americans. Under FISA, you can't actually target them. And even that amendment is being opposed by the people who oppose FISA. And by the way, those are a lot of the same people who love to tweet about how much they hate the cartels and how we should bomb the cartels and make them, you know, and all that. So talking tough, but not really supporting the actual legislation that would be extremely helpful here.
And, you know, the 9/11 families have all gone to bat saying FISA needs to be renewed. Reform, sure. Tuned up, absolutely. But essentially, the need for this, it allows warrantless surveillance of foreigners outside the U.S., people who are not protected by the Fourth Amendment. American citizens and people within the United States cannot be targeted under authority. But if they happen to be on the other end of talks with known terrorists, get their electronic communication, maybe their electronic communication could be swept up. However, to take further investigative steps against a U.S. person requires a warrant under the existing law. And they want somebody in there, a lawyer in there, to examine about the information given to these judges. So, with, for example, if Bin Laden's calling Brian Kilmeade, and they'll go, okay, we're following Bin Laden, we want to catch Bin Laden, but why the hell is he calling New York? And why is he talking to me? Knowing that I'm probably a member of Al-Qaeda, he's calling me for a reason. Do you want to know who I am, where I am, or do you want to just wait for something to explode that I'm responsible for? Now, we got to watch. You know, Carter Page, we know about it. George Papadopoulos, we know about it. They were targeted because these FBI agents have no ethics and no values and just said, we can get away with this, we're going to do it. So there was some fail-safe put in place, and a portion of this was renewed in 2018 and reformed under Donald Trump. Yesterday, he just put out a Truth Social that said, they spied on my campaign, get rid of it. Matt Gaetz says, I'm on it. And now it's stopped, and the speaker gets stopped. But everybody who wants to watch our back, honestly, says they need it in their toolbox. Marco Rubio says, if we get rid of this, we are out of the intelligence business. I know people are ticked off about Peter Strzok and McCabe and Lisa Page and all these other lunatics. They just got in so incensed by getting President Trump, they're going to take his team down. Now, build in the faith for fail safes, and then reinstall it. But you can't just blow it up. Because when things start blowing up, you're going to turn around and say, how could you let this happen? Well, how could you let it happen? They begged for the opportunity to be able to detect this, and we're good at it. We're able to find out ahead of time that things are going to blow up in Iran and warn them. Find out ahead of time things are going to blow up in Russia and warn them. We're able to warn to some degree our allies. We even do it with our enemies. And we're able to stay ahead of a lot. We do a lot of great work. But I don't think it's a good time to cut $500 million out of the FBI. And I don't think that we should just blindly say no more 702, no more FISA. Look into it. Don't be a simpleton. So far, since the FBI implemented their series of changes in 2021, inquiries of U.S. people who are on suspicious calls or emails are down 93%. That's an improvement, don't you think?
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. I come to you from a rainy New York City. I'm not complaining. At least we're not in New Orleans, where I know there's a ton of floods. So I just come to you, right? You know what? We're going to play hurt. We're going to play in the rain. The good news is we're indoors. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Paul Mercurio, an outstanding comedian. He's been with us a while. It's been a while. Also a writer, Mark Thiessen, is a great writer, used to write for George W. Bush, and he's also with the Washington Post and AEI fellow. So he's an impressive guy who I want to get to weigh in on a lot of things, including this election. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
We have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%. We're in a situation where we're better situated than we were when we took office, where inflation was skyrocketing, and we have a plan to deal with it.
That is just not true. It wasn't skyrocketing. It was 1.8%. Reality hits the White House as a collapsed border has them looking at executive orders they said they couldn't do. And riding inflation can't be ignored. Rising inflation cannot be ignored. Blaming Trump will not work. And Joe's attacking both shows. Shows that he could be panicking.
Number two.
I also explained that he is the Republican leader, that he is the leader of the opposition party against the Biden administration, and we expect him to lead that way, not to pass the Biden administration's agenda.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, just a one-woman explosion, getting on the same page. Speaker Johnson, the former president, and MTG, better get on the same page with FISA, with Ukraine aid, and with abortion quick. And why ousting the speaker will be the stupidest thing any party has ever done since they ousted the speaker last time.
Number one.
They do very well. They're closed on Sunday.
The Lord's chicken.
That's the Lord's chicken. You're right. It's good chicken, too.
It was a great moment. It was real politics. President Trump going into the inner city to a Chick-fil-A. African-American work staff for the most part, and he just wowed them. perfect contrast in plans with President Biden, who sat there with his sunglasses on, reading cards on who to call to, who seemingly had the answers ahead of time, while at night having a glitzy dinner party for the Prime Minister of Japan with Jeff Bezos and Robert De Niro, both of which won't answer my calls. But Mark Thiessen will. Mark, you join me now. Mark, you have to be impressed with President Trump going in unscripted into a Chick-fil-A.
Hey, 10-4, good buddy. I didn't know you were. I learned things about you all the time. I didn't know you were a CB radio aficionado. I learned that.
Okay,
on Fox
number one, you're talking about Fox and Friends yesterday. And one thing I used to do, I used to love getting on the CB and talking to strangers. What could be wrong with that?
I did that growing up as well. It was the most fun. You get Ducey was telling me before we went on the air that you'd say hemorrhoid with a Polaroid. there was a cop ahead with a radar gun.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah,
that was. Days. Can you imagine letting our kids today just talk to random strangers on the street?
What could go wrong? Yeah. Hey, I'm 9. Why not just let them give me go on the radio?
Yeah. Sure, let's just talk to random people and driving in cars around town. No possibility anything could go wrong.
Well, that was unscripted, and so is this with President Trump yesterday.
Yeah.
Cut two.
This has got a great American franchise, Chick-fil-A. It is. It's a great franchise. The owner is a great man who is a member of one of my clubs, and he's fantastic. And, they do very well. They're closed on Sunday.
The Lord's Chicken.
That's the Lord's Chicken. You're right. It's good chicken, too.
And I love this. Cut one.
So I don't care what the media tells you, Mr. Trump.
Thanks.
We support you.
We love you.
Okay, 4 p.m.
Come here, let me give you a hug.
Please.
I'm sorry. So President awesome. Biden doesn't have those moments. Your thoughts?
Yeah, they're so awesome. And, you know, first of all, it probably drives the left crazy that it was a Chick-fil-A because they hate Chick-fil-A. They love the taste. It's like their guilty pleasure, but they hate everything that Chick-fil-A stands for. They're in Jersey. They're trying to sue them to force them to open on Sundays or take away their franchises on the Jersey Turnpike. Because they're closed at that, so you know the left. So it's just beautiful. And I'll tell you something. You know that scene with that lovely African American woman who gave him a hug. Joe Biden has lost. This is the difference in this election right now. Okay, so Donald Trump's base is solidly behind him, but he's struggling with independents and with swing voters. They're going to decide the election. Joe Biden is struggling with the swing voters, but he's also struggling with his base. He's lost 30 points with African Americans over the last 3 years. He's lost 17 points with Hispanics, and he's behind now with young voters. This is their coalition. The Republican Party, the Democratic Party, used to be the party of the working class, and now the Republicans have taken away from them. So what are they? What are they now? They're the party of the coastal elites and a coalition of young voters and minorities. Well, if minorities leave them and young voters start leaving them, what are they? They're the party of the coastal elites. And that's not going to fly in November. So Biden has deep trouble with his base that he's got to deal with.
There's so much places to go. But I want you to hear this. Governor Sununu on with us. And you know, he was a big time surrogate for Nikki Haley. He was probably the most effective counter to Trump. Listen.
Trump's going to be successful because of Trump, not because someone endorses him, right? He's his own.
But does he need Nikki Haley's people? Does he need Nikki Haley?
No. No, he doesn't need Nikki so much. I mean, Nikki can do what she wants. She's independent. She's smart. But most of Nikki's voters are going to come over. I mean, they really are, because it's effectively a two-party system. This third-party stuff isn't going anywhere. And if you tend to lean Republican and you choose not to vote, you're voting for the Democrats. Mathematically, that's how it works. You're giving the Democrats what they want. So folks are going to come out and understand that these issues are real, they're serious. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of the time heals a lot of stuff, and there's going to be a lot of time between now and November.
So I just your thoughts. You probably didn't even know. You know, I didn't know what I know he said he was going to vote for Trump. I did not know he was going to be that aggressive for him. And it's the old politics. I'll go at you hard. When it's over, it's over. Yeah. I also heard DeSantis is going to do fundraisers. He said that yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, Trump, that's great. Look, everybody's willing. I think most Republicans are willing to come around and help Trump, but he's got to pitch them. He's got to ask for those votes and that support. And Haley's voters, yeah, some of them will come over, but there's a segment of people who will not, or are reluctant. And this is the thing that Trump has to do, is he needs to ask for their vote. And he needs to be – one of the things that I like about what he did with abortion this week, putting aside the fact that I think he's 100% right on the abortion issue, because for simple – I would love – first of all, I'm pro-life. I would love – if we could end abortion tomorrow, and I would do it in a heartbeat. You're not going to – you can't get – you can't do it in federally because you can't get 60 – you need 60 votes in the Senate, right? So it's a false promise to say that we're going to have some federal ban. So why would Trump endorse a federal ban that he can't even deliver on when he's elected, because we're not going to have – the Republicans are not going to have 60 votes in the Senate anytime soon. So what he's doing is he's taking away an argument from the Democrats that Trump and Republicans want to ban abortion in the country. He's allowing us to pivot and focus on the extremism of the left. But he's also – this is the first thing I've seen him do that isn't feeding his base. It's reaching out to the center. It's reaching out to suburban voters. It's reaching out to swing voters and trying to find – do, quite frankly, exactly what Nikki Haley did, which is to say, look, I'm pro-life. In his case, he's the greatest pro-life president in my lifetime. He delivered the Supreme Court. He's the one who overturned Roe v. Wade. He's the only president who spoke in person at the March for Life. I mean, everybody else called their speeches in. He not only had pro-life policies, but he openly embraced the pro-life movement and didn't treat them like the black sheep of the Republican coalition. But he's saying we got to do this at the state level. We have to do it incrementally. And that's the right message to win over those swing voters, which who are going to decide the election. So I think it's smart. It's the right thing to do. And it's also politically smart. He's got to keep doing stuff like that because to win the moderate centrist swing voters in the key battleground states.
You got to renew FISA. I understand people are a little freaked out about it when we saw the way it was being abused. And we got to do us a favor. If you don't like where the speaker's going in legislation, let's not try to throw him out. Tell that to Marjorie Taylor Greene. Cut 20.
We had a discussion. I explained through my letter that everyone's read and I sent to my colleagues. I also explained that he is the Republican leader. That he is the leader of the opposition party against the Biden administration, and we expect him to lead that way, not to pass the Biden administration's agenda. I made that clear to Speaker Johnson, that the United States border is the only border that matters, and that if he moves forward in funding Ukraine, that he's going to be personally responsible for funding the continued murder of people in a foreign country that is not a NATO ally of ours, and that the American people do not support.
Have at it, Mark.
She is a dumb as a bucket of rocks. Like, she should spend her time focusing on searching for those Jewish space lasers. I mean, first of all, Section 702, Donald Trump reauthorized Section 702 of the FISA bill. This is the same. Jackie Heinrich had a great piece on Fox.com about this. This is not the provision that was used to go after Trump. That was Title I of the FISA law. This is Section 702, which allows us to go after terrorists. And I'm telling you something, if you look at our southern border and all the people on the terrorist watch list that we've been catching at the border, how many people have gotten through? If Republicans do not reauthorize Section 702 and there's a terrorist attack in this country, we're going to share in the blame in it. So, you know, but I know Marjorie Taylor Greene isn't smart enough to get that. And second of all, saying that, you know, we're funding the murder of people in Ukraine. No, we're giving them weapons to defend. You know, the people saying that this is funding, you know, murder. If it wasn't for our weapons, the Russians would be carpet bombing Ukrainian cities, coming in, raping and murdering people like the Hamas did on October 7th and like they did in Bucha when they got on the outskirts of Kyiv. We're sending weapons to protect civilian lives in Ukraine. And you know, this is I'm just – the fact that this woman has any influence on anything at all, if we had a majority of 20 votes like we should in the Senate, she'd be a backbencher that no one would pay any attention to. This is why we need to build our majority up. We need to win elections. We need to have normal candidates, which thank God we're doing in the Senate, you know, because Steve Daines is doing such a great job in recruiting great candidates. We need to expand our majority so that these cranks like Marjorie Taylor Greene right. are sitting in the backbench where they belong and nobody's paying attention to them.
But they are, and it's sad. And I could go on to with you for an hour, but I want to get to Ukraine. Dan Sullivan gets it. He's trying to give these people an understanding of why it's in our interest to get these Ukrainians weapons. Cut 35.
Well, I'm fearful it's been mischaracterized, which it has been. It's not really a Ukraine aid bill, Brett. It is really focused on our ability to produce weapons for our own country. 60% of this bill goes directly into the industrial base of America, which is dramatically atrophied in terms of our ability to produce weapons. Everything from submarines to 155-millimeter howitzers. That's why I'm a strong supporter of that bill.
To get them to $65 billion, we get the new stuff, they get the old stuff, and they get to fight. So people don't understand how much more money we're going to have to spend in fortifying our NATO allies if Ukraine falls. Do they not get that?
They don't. Look, I wrote the big essay that started this whole argument in the Washington Post, which laid out the research on this. I went through the entire, all the Ukraine aid, and here's what I found. 90% of the aid to Ukraine isn't going to Ukraine. It's going to the American defense industrial base. It's going to we had not produced a single Stinger missile since 2006. In this country. Why? Because we were fighting terrorists who didn't have Stingers are designed to take down jets, right? We were fighting terrorists who didn't have jet fighters. Well, guess what? China has jet fighters. Russia has jet fighters. Iran has jet fighters. We need Stinger missiles. Because of the war in Ukraine, we've restarted the production of Stinger missiles. We're producing weapons that we had assembly lines. You know, everybody talks about how we need to create good manufacturing jobs in America. Our manufacturing jobs for weapons that we need to defend ourselves had gone quiet, and the Ukraine aid has started those factories up, has started those weapon systems building again, and what we're doing is we're modernizing our militaries. What we do is we provide them with weapons from our stockpiles that are sometimes decades old, and we send those to Ukraine, and then we build new ones for ourselves that are more modern, more advanced versions of the same weapons, and that's strengthening our military. So it's a win-win. We're helping the Ukrainians defend themselves from an unjust aggressor, and we're helping prepare the United States to defend itself and its allies from China and other threats. I don't understand why this isn't a two-minute decision in the first minutes for coffee.
I'm more exasperated than you are. I just see these people fighting with – going to be throwing rocks at the Russians soon, yet they're better fighters. They're more organized. They're more determined. The Russians are just sacrificing human beings, putting them into a meat grinder, and then we just stopped arming our ally. I mean, how many more allies do we want to abandon? Final thought about President Biden demanding a ceasefire and a hostage deal, and it's Hamas that's walking away from it.
It's just stunning the way he is. You know, there was a Harvard Harris poll the other day that was devastating for Joe Biden, and what it found was 54% majority think that he's making decisions in the Israel-Hamas war based on his domestic political concerns rather than what's best for America, Israel, and world peace. That's in a nutshell why he's losing this election right now. It's because the American people think that he's just caving to this left-wing anti-Semitic pro-terrors base in the Democratic Party. He's so worried about 5% of the electorate in Michigan. How about the 80% who support Israel? You know, you're concerned about Arab American voters? There's hundreds of thousands of Jewish voters in Michigan. What about them? Are you not concerned about those votes? Do the right thing, and it's also the right thing. It's not just the right thing politically; it's the right thing morally. It's a win-win. When you're president, the way you win is by being strong. And he's weak on the world stage, and he rejects political weakness at home as well. Weakness is provocative. We've just got to end this weak leadership in the White House.
But you present nothing but strength, Mark Thiessen. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thanks for admitting that you also like the CB. Both of us had no friends as kids, so we had to talk to strangers. What is wrong with that? There was no Instagram.
Brought us today to talking to strangers on the radio.
Go get him, Mark. I have not progressed since I was nine. See ya. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I did not give him a red line, and I have been very considerate of my conference. And I'm continuing to be considerate of my conference. He discussed having a kitchen cabinet group that would be a group of advisors for him, asked me if I was interested, and I said, I'll wait and see what his proposal is on that. Right now, he does not have my support, and I'm watching what happens with FISA and Ukraine. Those are the two things that we'll all be watching.
It's unbelievable that we have to deal with this. You know, she has an opinion. I appreciate that she loves the country and will do whatever Donald Trump tells her. But she also understood that Kevin McCarthy said that, you know, you can talk to her, you could deal with her. This is a logical situation. You have to understand the reality. You know, it's like saying I have a 12-game lead in the American League East. I'm going to be able to rest my starters. If you have a half-game lead in the American League East with 10 games to go, you can't rest your starters. I'm sorry, there's no difference right now. You have a one-seed advantage. You have to play ball in the House. You can't pretend like you have a 20-seed advantage. If you're going to use that one seed to oust the Speaker, I can't think of a stupider thing to do. You're basically giving Hakeem Jeffries the chance. I think Speaker Johnson should hold the line, do what he thinks best. He didn't ask for this job. He is doing the job effectively. You got to get Ukraine aid in. Get the unfreezing of LNG licenses out and maybe some border security. Do a deal directly with the president, but do a deal, which means compromise.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Oh, your mom was straight. How old are you?
95.
Whoa! What's that?
1928, do the math.
Okay, lady, I'm not your son. Don't talk to me like that. Wait, I think you're faster than I am.
Want to race?
What? You want to? I'm a little intimidated right now.
So that is Paul Mercurio on stage with a 95-year-old woman.
Yes.
95-year-old woman. And she was not pre-booked. That's part of his show. You've know Paul from our show, also The Late Show, The Tonight Show, everything that had show at the end. He's been doing stand-up forever. And you still regret leaving the business world. Is that true?
It's true.
You left finance.
I was on Wall Street. Right. I was doing M&A deals. I was a lawyer just a few blocks from here at a firm called Wilkie Farr & Gallagher. And then I was at Credit Suisse doing investment banking. Yes, I still regret it.
You still, every day.
I feel like I'm home with my parents.
Right.
Yes. I walked into this building in Ropes and Gray, which is a very prestigious law firm. I saw it, and I had a flashback to being a lawyer. And for a split second, I'm like,
maybe I should have worn a suit.
Yeah.
But you're watching Paul right now. You probably see him on stage. So, and of course, you see him doing stand-up all around. But you had a show going right before COVID, and it's called Permission to Speak, live on stage. What's the premise?
The premise is that we're kind of nameless and faceless to each other and disconnected and at times even divisive. It's not a political show, but I came to realize through talking to audiences in my stand-up shows,
right,
if we share stories, we realize like we're all in this boat together and we all kind of living up kind of screwed up lives and we have more in common than we think. And maybe we connect a little bit better. And that's the premise of the show. And it just came out of talking to people and just getting, like I said to a woman, what's your name? All I said is, what's your name? Because everybody has a story. Right. I know it's cliche. You have, well, yours, they're very
I make
dark.
A lot of it. Mine not.
Mine,
a lot has really never happened. Like a lot of my biography, it's not verifiable.
Right. You're not even here right now.
I think I am here, but that's about all I can
you're
say.
You're a hologram. You're like, you're just a torso. Right. So I said to the woman, what's your name? She goes, Nydia. I go, Lydia? She goes, no, Nydia with an N. I go, that's a unique name. How did you get the name? So my rule is like if I have the question, I ask it because I figure if I have the question, everybody else does. And then she starts laughing. So now I know there's a story. She goes, my father got my mother pregnant with me, but at the same time was having an affair with a woman named Nydia, and he named me after the woman he was having an affair with.
How great is that?
It's like the crowd, everybody's like, what? Like people are screaming. And so we started to get these stories, and some people saw me talking to audiences like this, some Broadway producers, and they said, were those people plants? I'm like, no. They go, how does it work out? I'm like, I don't know. I just think you start talking to people, and if they know you're not going to compromise them, they'll give you the world. And actually, some people like need to tell
you
story.
Look to make fun of them.
No. But if somebody says something that sounds like BS or whatever, I'll call them on it.
Right.
And I think they get that sense that I'm not making fun of them. So I just go out. I have an opening monologue that sort of synopsizes the show, which I just mentioned. And then I just go, you, and you come up. I don't screen them ahead of time. Right. I don't look at them ahead of time because I don't want – like I would look at you and I'm like
– probably stay away.
Yeah. This guy just seems like it's going to be a problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Too much hair. Very annoying. handsome, good right. teeth.
I'm very, very handsome.
You got more handsome.
Right. You know, I say Invisalign. I went Invisalign.
I did too.
Did you? It worked, right?
Did you with the retainer?
Well, I started to again because I realized I wasted my money if I don't.
You can't. Right. I've been skipping like every other night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How long? When did you get it?
I got it like 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, look great. And no surgery, no adult braces.
Exactly. And right. I had lost a lot of teeth from my drinking. But they all came back. They grew back. But yeah, anyway, you have great teeth.
Here's more from Paul's show, Permission to Speak, Cut 42.
I own Diversity Rock and Ball. I was controller of a bank investment software company, left that job to buy the bowling alley for $2 with my friend Gary.
Well, you needed a friend because you didn't have $2?
Well, he still owes me a buck.
Gary.
He still owes me a buck.
Gary, I got a great deal, but I only have a dollar on me. Come on, man. I can't. All right.
So that was a guy you just brought on stage.
So I'm in Chicago, and this is the cool thing about taking it out of New York. When you drop yourself into a city, you're like a visitor in their city, and they know things about their city that you don't. So when he said I own Diversity Rock and Roll, I had a woman on stage too, and you heard her. Everybody gasped, like, like it was like the second coming. I go, what? They go, it's only the coolest bowling alley like ever. Like everybody knew about it except me, right?
Right.
And then I just started talking to him. And he was a controller in a company and didn't like the finance world. Gee, I wonder what that's like. And he buys his bowling alley for $2. And then it goes on from there. And then he tells a story about like crazy things that have happened in the bowling alley. And then people end up connecting after the show. So several people went up to him and said how much they love us, and they started talking. And so there's this cool kind of sense of community, not in a schmaltzy way.
Yeah, but this is a good counter to this whole world we're in right now is on social media. Hi, you're my friend, but I'd rather look at my phone than talk to you.
Exactly. Or, you know, your views and my views are different, therefore we're both enemies to each other. And I think, like, unfortunately, people far right, far left, they're never going to agree on politics. But if they start to see, like, hey, that guy that I think is the devil – isn't. He's just like me. He's got a dog that poops on the rug, too. And I got to, you know, we share a lot. Maybe I'll listen to his politics. We're not talking politics and I'm not trying to change the world. But it's why Frank Oz, my director, got involved, because he said, I think we really need a show like this. Or just sort of, you know, less people hang out. It really goes from being a show like we're hanging out in somebody's big basement, having drinks, telling stories. And the stories have just been like, I had a guy. And he looked like he was like a tough guy, like kid, like 25 from, I think, the Bronx. I go, what's going on? He goes, you look like you're in a bad mood. So like that'll be like, I'll just vibe off of somebody's like, you know, you look like you're sleeping right now. So I would say you look like you're sleeping because, you know, you look like you're half asleep.
That hurts my feelings. By the way, I've been up since 3. So I'm the only person not tired.
I feel.
You can. And you're used to holding a microphone.
But I'm a stand up. Pete, am I allowed to stand? Pete, you got to trim that beard.
Stand.
It doesn't look healthy.
It's tough to go toe to toe with Brian in a standing position.
No, right? I can't. No, he's that's too much. I said to the guy, "What's going on?" He goes, "I just broke up with my girlfriend." I go, "What happened?" He goes, "I told her not to shoplift at CVS." And then I go, "Wait, stop. Did you say at CVS?" See, and this is the key. Like, if I'm in my own head thinking about a bit I'm going to do, I miss those two words.
Right.
He goes, "Yeah." I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you know, she wanted a shoplift, so I taught her how to shoplift." And I go, wait, stop. Yeah. Now he's talking to me like this is normal. And the crowd is like, oh, my God, what's happening? Everybody's leaning forward. And this is why I say you can't write this stuff, because if we were writers in a room, like, nobody believes. I go, what happened? He goes, well, yeah, I've been stealing stuff since I was like 12. Like, I would steal bikes in the neighborhood and sell them back to the kids or beat them up. Right? And I go, so what happened? He goes, so she saw me getting all this cool stuff that I was stealing, and she wanted nice stuff. And she goes, oh, please teach me. And she kept nagging me. I'm like, no, I'm not going to teach you, because you're just going to waste it. You're going to, like, go to Walgreens or CVS. And what's the point shoplifting there? And so it's like, and it's all normal to him. So he's saying this stuff, and I'm like, and he's going, it's like that movie where he goes, I will give you these powers, Brian, but you must use them for good and not evil,
yes.
Right? So I go, what happened? He goes, well, sure enough, she wore me down. I taught her how to shoplift. What does she do? She goes to CVS. She gets arrested for shoplifting lipstick. I go, so how did it end? He goes, well, she was in the back of the squad car. I went down there. We got in a big argument. I broke up with her. I go, when? She goes, in the back of the squad car. And that was it. And so these stories are just coming out. And two things are happening, I think, with the audience. One is they're connecting with him, or at least they're seeing, like, oh, you know, that okay, I don't live that life, but somebody else's life is interesting and crazy.
All right, we're just getting news now. O.J. Simpson has just died at the age of 76 from cancer.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this guy won from the ultimate. He was one of the top personalities in the country. You guys might not realize that, remember that. He was the number one spokesperson, number one of the top sportscasters, one of the finest athletes. He was doing Wired World of Sports with Howard Cosell. He was doing movies, right?
Yeah.
Towering Inferno, doing Naked Gun.
The Hertz, he used to run over the counter, everything.
This was the guy. And then you've never seen such an epic fall, whether it's drugs. He kills Rob Goldman. He kills his ex-wife.
Well, hopefully he'll find the murderer in the afterlife.
Right.
I think that's his clinical searching.
So at 76, I did not know it was that serious.
I didn't even know he had cancer.
Right. The one thing, when he got out of prison, I thought for sure this guy was going to stay in the limelight, but he didn't, and he passed away, I think, in Florida. Hey, Pete, could you find out more information on that?
Yes, we will.
Okay. Right. Unless you don't want to.
Well, my goal is to get your stress level up, so I'm going to say no.
You know, I got this ring. I got this. You know the Aura ring?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you bought that?
Well, yeah.
Where is it?
Right here.
Okay.
So it tells me how I slept last night. It tells me my
REM. Why do you want to know that? My son has an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And it assesses how he sleeps.
Yeah.
So then you wake up and you're stressed about if you slept right.
Well, right? I don't overreact to my sleep, but it did say my stress level could be raised. I'm a little low on stress.
Oh, you don't have enough stress.
Not enough stress.
Oh, I thought Pete was trying to lower your stress. I can increase your stress. I'm an extremely annoying human being.
All right. Well,
but any other like dying from cancer stories you want to interrupt my comedy segment with? This is like not helping comedy right now, guys.
Can I just say this?
Yes.
He's the one guy who dies from cancer. Doesn't make me sad. I mean, can I bring that
up? Your Aura ring is ringing happy right now.
Right, yeah, congratulations, OJ. We will not miss you on Earth.
Yeah, exactly.
Back with more Paul Mercurio in just a moment. Keep in mind, you can catch him in Tarrytown Music Hall coming up on April 20th. That's next weekend. Go to tarrytownmusichall.org and find out. I can tell you this, every show's different. So you can't say, well, I saw that show already. Well, no, you didn't see the next show because it feeds off the audience.
Yeah, when we do shows back-to-back, we're having people buy tickets to the second show and come back.
Right, I didn't know you were going to talk again. I was going to go to break.
You know I always do.
Back in a moment.
Is this annoying?
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Travis, how are you? What do we got here? What's the issue?
Polio.
Oh, yeah?
My kids are younger. I would go to the school place. Obviously, the kids would be like, hey, is that your dad? Is he RoboCop? Blah, blah, blah. I would tell the kids, hey, I'm from Vietnam. That's how I got hurt. They're like, really? You were in Vietnam? And I was like, yeah. And it was a joke. But my daughter's 18 now. And a few months ago, she was like, Daddy, were you really in Vietnam? I was like, oh, I forgot. I told that. And you were like, six. I told everybody that you were like six. I never fixed it.
So that is some Paul Mercurio, somebody you just walked up to in your audience.
This
you have
is
no
a
idea
guy
who's going to be there.
He's 38 years old with polio.
And
I said, how do you explain polio to your kid? This is part of my show, Permission to Speak. Because that's just like we both have kids. It's like he's got those crutches.
You saw him in a wheelchair or a crutches?
I saw him with the crutches. And I knew that it was those kind of crutches that go around the forearm.
Yeah.
So I knew. And I like to talk to people with maladies because
nobody else does. So
that's exactly right. And I think people mean well. They don't talk to them because I think they're worried they're going to insult them or say something stupid. So they just avoid them. And it hurts their feelings. So I just go right at it. So I go, come on up. And he comes up and he has polio. And I'm like, what are you, FDR? How do you have polio at 38? And you just got polio. And then I start talking about what's like that polio. You know, can you?
It's great.
Yeah. Can you get things? Can sex? Oh, yeah. I guess everything. It all works. Everything works. Places go great. And then he said, I got a kid. And I go, well, how do you explain this? And he said, she was six. So I told her I got injured in Vietnam. And then 12 years later, she asked me, did you really get injured in Vietnam? And he goes, and I forgot I told that. And that place goes crazy.
Wow. Do you ever? I mean, it seems like they all hit. I mean, do you ever walk to people and they just go, nothing, or I just got divorced. I got hit by a car. Same day.
I'm OJ. I just died of cancer.
Right. By the way, you did. You're just reporting the news now. Yes. Good job.
Thank you.
OJ's dead.
Yes. Okay.
So at least he can't kill anymore.
Well, you never know.
Right.
You never know what happens in the afterlife.
We don't know. So he was in hospice care, we understand.
Yeah.
So OJ had reportedly been battling prostate cancer in recent years. He went to hospice. He's now dead. Mm. Now go ahead.
Okay. You are the worst setup for comedy ever. ever. Well, Pete, what am I doing here?
Pete, what is he doing here? So,
exactly.
We're trying to figure that out.
Wow. Look at this. You're ganging up on me. So, yes, I can tell within a couple of seconds if somebody's like just – I know they have a story, but it's too much, and I'm not going to press them. But it's funny. It's the ones that say, I'm too nervous. They end up being the ones who can't shut up, and they take over the show. It's always the case. So no, I mean, and look, almost everybody has a story, and we get to it. And some are they all 10 out of 10? Most of them are. Some are maybe not so much, but those are still good too. And you know, all you do is talk and listen and talk and listen, and then it sort of just all kind of comes to you.
So give me an idea. The name of the show, which he's going to be in Tarrytown Music Hall, he's going to be there Saturday night, a week from this Saturday. Mm-hmm. So it's called Permission to Speak.
Right.
And, Paul, you've been doing stand-up for how many years now?
Just a couple of weeks. I'm really good.
Right. It's been a great first week. The second week's been a little off.
Exactly. Well, you know.
20 years?
Yeah. So a little less than 20.
Right now, if someone said, I need a stand-up.
Yeah.
At New York Comedy Club, how much could you give? Like how much material do you have? An hour?
Oh, yeah.
An hour?
Yeah.
So you said this is a different show. You're still doing stand-up.
So in May, middle of May, May 10th, 11th, I'm going to be in Edmonton, Canada at a place called the House of Comedy. And the end of May, 25th to the 27th, that last weekend, I'm going to be at the House of Comedy in Phoenix, Arizona, just doing stand-up. But my stand-up involves some of Permission to Speak now because it was born out of that, and I like to talk to the audiences. So at the beginning of my stand-up, I'll start talking to people. And then I don't have a set order. A lot of comics have a set order, right? So I just do my material based on where the conversation is with the person, right? Like, and I have stories. Like if I'm talking to somebody who's older, like my mother's 96, right? And we just had to close her furniture store. This is all true. She's 96. And we'll not go down. We try everything.
Just works like crazy.
She just wants to just run this furniture business. So we had to close it. And she's mad that she wants to open the store somewhere. She goes, why do I have to close it? I go, well, let's start with the fact that you grew up in the Depression and you won't buy anything. So she goes through people's garbage looking for good garbage that's broken that needs to be fixed. She found a hearing aid in the garbage and it whistles all the time. It's like it's just.
And she uses it.
It's like talking to a tea kettle in a house dress. So what happened is she's very forgetful and she can't hear. So one day I go to the store, the door is locked, and there's a woman in the store. Now there's no broken glass. I'm like, what's going on? I go in the store. I go, man, what happened? She goes, I was looking around. I turned to ask your mother a question. I couldn't get out. I said, how long you been here? She goes, 4 hours. My mother locked her in the store. And I go, what happened? She goes, well, I browsed a lot. She goes, I took a nap on that sofa. And she goes, is your name Paul? I go, yeah. She goes, well, the phone rang. I took messages. She took messages, right? So now you can never win with your parents, no matter how old you are, right? So I go, Ma, you can't lock people in the store. She goes, oh, I don't know what you're yelling me about. The woman liked that sofa. She took a nap on. She's going to buy it. I made a sale, and I wasn't even in the store. I'm like, okay. So I share stories during the show, Permission to Speak. And then there's a thing called the flip, which you would love to do. Because I allow somebody in the audience to take a microphone and ask me questions, anything they want. And so that's always really fun, and they like to bust my chops a little bit.
So here's the thing. With a good audience, sober, plus comedy clubs, they encourage you to drink.
Yes.
I watch people act unruly when you don't want them to.
Yeah.
How do you control a crowd? You know when you got some knuckleheads in there. They want to dominate.
I'd rather have that than dead. Like it happened that we did a show outside of Philly, and I don't know what it was. It was a Saturday night, and they were spunky from the get-go. And like I'd say something, and they would yell something out to the person. But I incorporated it into the show because I wanted to be like that. I wanted to feel comfortable enough.
And by the way, let me just say it. I totally understand. Philadelphia on a Saturday night. Who would think that crowd would be out of control? Totally caught me by surprise. I mean, who would think that?
They have the nicest sports fans, too.
It's a late show in Philadelphia.
Yeah. What could happen? What could go wrong?
And that yelling over the gunfire certainly is a challenge. But when you're a pro and you've been doing it 2 weeks, Hey, check him out, Paul Mercurio. Do you have a website?
PaulMercurio.com. I'm also going to be in Schaumburg, Illinois, outside of Chicago in August with permission to speak in Indianapolis. We're going to be in all over. So PaulMercurio.com, Tarrytown, April 20th, Tarrytown Music Hall.
Stay within yourself, Paul.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Today, I thought the big news is going to be the Filipino leader meeting with the Japanese leader and President Biden setting up a triumvirate, a way to counter China. And without saying China's a problem. No, we just want to be friends and give each other Tomahawk missiles. We're not worried about China. But the story that just came out right now, O.J. Simpson's dead at 76, prostate cancer, went into hospice, now he's dead. And now we're reliving that moment with a guy that I did not know back then but knew of, Mike Rowe. That's the best transition I got.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mike Rowe. Seamless. From Mike Rowe, as far as I can tell. I'm going to listen to it back. Mike Rowe works Foundation, the CEO. He's host, narrator, executive producer of How America Works, as well as everything else. He controls his own destiny. For that, I am jealous. And you don't age.
Well, that's very, very kind of you. What was the book? The Picture of Dorian Gray. Remember? Did you ever have to read that one?
Not yet.
Oh, God. Great, great story about a guy who never gets older, but there's a portrait of him, a picture, like, in the attic, and that gets older. So if you really want to see what he looks like, you have to look at this magical picture. He looks like hell. Right. But in real life, he's pretty good. That's me.
Hey, Pete, can you find that picture or the book? Would you? And just don't give me excuses. All right? Josh is busy. But, you know, O.J. being dead, we do remember where we were when the verdict came out, right? No, I remember more watching saying there's – the Knicks were playing the Rockets. Mm. And for New York, for the Knicks, haven't had a championship since 1972.
Yeah.
And they're in the finals against the Rockets. By the way, they were leading at 3-2 in the series. They have a chance to lock it up at Madison Square Garden. I wasn't there, but I was watching it. They evidently were going in the halls to watch the Bronco chase and leaving the finals against Hakeem Olajuwon against Patrick Ewing. That's how crazy it was in America.
I can't beat that, but in terms of weirdness, I was in Dyersville, Iowa, shooting a segment for a project about the original Field of Dreams, right? So I'm in the cornfield where the actual owner of the actual piece of property where Costner shot the movie, I'm doing stand-ups with a farmer, right?
Was that for PM Magazine?
No, it was for something even more obscure.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't matter. I'm there in the cornfield doing my best to make a living, and then I walk into this tiny little bed and breakfast where I was staying, and they have a black and white TV in my room, and I turn it on, and there's this slow motion SUV with people frantically describing what's happening. And it, like, when you're in Dyersville trying to get your mind around the same image that's on every single channel, It like sears in your retina.
Absolutely.
And you're not quite sure why, but over time, man, the next couple of years, the Lance Ito singers, remember, and all the craziness and the T-shirts and what a time, man. What a time.
AJ Cowlings was the driver. Who would think that guy crunched in the backseat of a white Bronco with AJ Cowlings screaming they would eventually be found innocent?
Who'd have thought the first time the word Kardashian got seared into our collective memory was all around that, too.
The dad.
Yeah.
So the crazy thing was, and I never really discussed this, the first person that I knew involved with that case that actually knew that he got away with murder that showed it was him. Yeah. Do you remember the exasperation on his face when they found him innocent? Because they invited him into the law team so no longer be a witness because he knew O.J. He hid O.J.'s clothes. They were gone. We never found out. He knew everything. O.J. probably confessed to him that he killed somebody. What do I do?
Yeah.
So how do we stop him from being a witness? He's part of the legal team.
It was looking back, man. You know what's interesting? A lot of people over the last 3 or 4 years have gone through this kind of emperor's new clothes phase, right, where they see a thing and they know that it's true, but they're being told something completely different. I don't care whether it's the withdrawal from Afghanistan.
What a great – I know where you're going.
Or the security of the border or
– crime in New York City.
Crime in New York City, the best collegiate female swimmer in the world – who appears to have the full block and tackle, right? Like the things
to be
you,
a man.
the things you see,
yeah.
the things you see and the things you're told don't line up. That's the first time in my life on a national level I remember feeling that way.
Unbelievable the way you have a way of putting things perspective, because now we're at the point where we don't believe anything.
That's right.
Right. We don't believe anything, especially when people tell us. We had the mayor in New York City come out and go, crime is down. It's the safest big city in America. We know that's not crime down. With people being thrown in front of trains, Venezuelan illegal immigrants beating up cops,
right.
a CVS being shoplifted. When the cops come, they fight the guys and all five of them get out. Come on. Are you crazy?
I know. Look, you can even look at it with respect to the president. You know, I think everybody agrees that he's older than he's ever been and maybe not as sharp as he's ever been. So rather than acknowledging any of that, any diminishment at all, what we're told is he is just a paragon of intellectual acuity and physical prowess. He is on fire. We can't keep up with him. And it's like, well, wait. Really? I mean, you're going to go there. It's like you're buying a used car and you're haggling, and it's got to go from, you know, $20,000. You start there. I'll start at $200, right? And I'll meet you somewhere around $12,500.
Right.
All right. But it's happening with every single thing. Every single thing. Look at him. There he is on the TV, just as innocent as can be, except
he's not.
No.
Right. And now we find out what happens in the afterlife. If he's in heaven, then we could have done anything. Right. I mean, there really are no rules. Right. I mean, listen, he was beloved, probably top five most sought after endorser until he became the most vilified man in the world. So people have to remember that. You want him on Wild World of Sports. You want him on the sideline. You want him on your scoreboard show. You want him in Naked Gun. You want him in Towering Inferno. Mm-hmm. You know, you wanted him in the Battle of the Network Stars. Everywhere you go, this guy just embraced it. I remember the first time I knew that this guy was not who he was. I was hosting a show with Jim Brown, the running back, mm-hmm. and he did not like OJ ever. And people just assumed because he moved on the Hollywood thing, Jim Brown was, in my view, the first athlete to break that barrier. I believe I'm right.
Yeah.
And Jim's like, no, I don't care what he does. It's just that he's not who he comes off as. He's not. That's not the OJ we know behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And he also told me how sloppy he was getting on the golf course, openly doing coke in front of everybody, asking for fans to do it, you know, give it to him if they had it. Back then, coke was much more prevalent. It would be much more of a story. He goes, he's getting sloppy. And that was before, I stopped hosting a show with him in 93. A year later, he's killing, and I'm going, this guy was probably on a drug binge, doesn't even know what the hell he was doing. He's got the strength of 10 men. He is unbelievably
devastating athlete.
Yeah.
Devastating. And he runs through airports.
As far as I know, that was good with bad knees, but he ended up with the 49ers and was not the same player. Okay, can we talk about what we were originally going to talk about?
Yeah, but it is worth dwelling on for a second because these are moments. You know, you don't really know it when they happen, but it's part of what makes a society a society and what makes
where people, you were when it happened.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, whether it's 9/11 or Kennedy's assassination or this kind of thing or maybe – you know, for me, most recently, March 13th, 2020, you know, I did the last big public event in the country before the government shut down in California. And you don't know it at the time. It's 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and then it's 2 months later, and then it's a year later. And then you're looking back going, holy
2 years,
crap,
yeah.
man.
What the hell
just
happened?
What just happened? We've had time to think about OJ and process it. We haven't had time, Brian, to think about the lockdowns fully. We were so glad to get out of them. And now that we're out of them, we're so eager to move on. We haven't really unpacked it. Not really. I don't think.
You're 100%. Out of everything, 9/11 being on the air at that time, it's indelible. No doubt about it. I don't want to diminish that. But the thing is, we hit it. It was boom. Reaction. War. Recovery. What are we doing? Election. Got it. But with the pandemic, it was all unscripted, making up as you go along, and we feel so let down by the people in charge because they had no humility to say, we're not sure, but this is what we can say. They took discretion away from the American people, robbed us of our lives, our occupation, maybe fractured families forever, financially might never recover, businesses may never come back. And in the end, they were wrong by about 70% of it, including how it started and their reaction. And the anecdote was called a vaccine, which if you just said, listen, These are the plus and minuses. This is, I think it's going to help people who are severely obese who have under. But if for all the other 19-year-old baseball players, you probably don't need to do it, but you can make your own decision.
They petted us on the head.
They told us what to do and vilified us for not doing it.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, in the last 60 seconds.
Furthering the divide in the country.
All of that anger, all of that mistrust that you just articulated times 330 million. To some degree, every single person is still wondering who moved their cheese and how that happened and what in the. It's like falling down the steps in slow motion, right? It's
right.
Like, when is this going to stop? How much crazier is this going to get? And you know something? God bless a sense of humor. We're going to need one because the next 8 months are going to be unlike any 8 months I think we've ever lived through.
Because you factor in elections, it's polarizing to a degree.
Yeah.
Although I do have some hope that people are beginning to break the Trump fever and just going to treat him like a candidate, which is so important. Treat Biden like a candidate. Treat him like a candidate, like it's Bush, Gore, whatever it is. You want the other guy to win. I understand it. But when the other guy wins, he may disagree with you, but he's not an alien. Mm. He's not. He should be treated just like somebody that maybe is a different party, not from a different planet. But we'll take a time out. You have a way of putting things in perspective. And we have to add into all that. Well, at least one major criminal case, and maybe three more.
It just wouldn't be the same without that kind
without
of thing.
Without it. Back in a moment, unless Mike storms out of here. Because I say we're going to do a quick thing, and then O.J. dies. Again, O.J.
Once
screwing
again,
up our
preempted.
Format.
God.
But not preempted. You were actually on. Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This has got a great American franchise to play.
It is. It's a great franchise. The owner is a great man who is a member of one of my clubs, and he's fantastic. And, they do very well. They're closed on Sunday.
The Lord's Chicken.
That's the Lord's Chicken. You're right. It's good chicken, too.
So, Mike Rowe, I love this. This is Trump at his best. He's driving. He said, I'm going to pull over. I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A. And he walked in there. It's in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Normally people go, don't go in there. I don't even know who's going to be in there. How are you going to be received? You might get booed. No, let's go in. They love him behind the counter. I don't know if you've seen the video. Mm-hmm. And then a woman comes out and goes, I don't care what they say about you, Mr. Trump. I'm going to vote for you. He goes, let me give you a hug. This is like old time.
Yeah.
This is old time politicking.
Well, you can't script it. And it does require a willingness to assume a level of risk that I think a lot of people are happy to pay for. They're happy to reward it because they're just not seeing it in other places. You're just not seeing that level of spontaneity in any other elected official.
Another thing is this, and I get this with you too. When you go to an airport, people feel they can approach you. And something about Trump, he likes people. You don't have to be rich. In fact, rich people don't really like him. They think he's too flamboyant to be rich. So, like, the average person likes him. Mm. So he walks in there, and they start going wild. They're answering his questions. Let me buy 50 shakes. Same thing, you know. So he does. He buys 30 shakes, a bunch of burgers, gives them to the guys, and takes pictures with them.
What did he just call it? The Lord's Chicken?
Yeah, the Lord's Chicken.
I mean, can you imagine, like, you're running a KFC a block away, and all of a sudden, you know, the most visible guy on the planet
right. Basically
christens your competition as the Lord's Chicken.
Yeah, Popeye's just shut its doors. So the one thing I do want to talk to you about, and I was so enthused, Jenny's came up and said, Mike Rowe's going to be in town. And he goes, do you want to stop by? I go, oh, my God, that would be great. Well, you're going to be on One Nation this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But I just saw this story come out, and you have to feel to a degree happy. It seems like this generation is open to vocational schools.
Yeah.
More and more they're doing it. You've been talking about that. John Ratzenberger, famously of Cheers,
yeah,
talking about it. Do you feel like you're breaking through?
Look, it's too early for a victory lap, but it's funny you mentioned John. I met him in an airport probably 15 years ago.
Cliff Clavin.
Yep, when I was just starting MicroWorks. And he was a fan and very supportive, and I was a fan of his initiative. But if you really ask John, like, what's the goal? Like, in a simple sentence, he would have said, to get shop class back into high school. And I thought that was great. And I've been trying to do that myself now for the last decade and a half. I don't know how to do it. I don't think the feds are going to do it, and I don't think we can wait for the states to do it. But something else is happening. A lot of companies are stepping up and creating a kind of shop class in their own perimeters. They're doing what the schools abandoned years ago when they took the art out of the vocational arts. Ever since then, right, things have been a little loopy. Well, this article you're talking about in the Journal a week or so ago.
Can I just give you the stats? Gen Z enrollment in trade jobs, 16% increase in vocational programs, 23% increase in construction jobs, 7% increase in HVAC vehicle repair. Go ahead.
Yeah. That follows the increase in trade school enrollments juxtaposed with the decrease of enrollments in four-year schools. And that's new, right? That's the perception. Look, I've got nothing against a four-year education in general. What I've always opposed is the idea that promoting that path at the expense of all the others is smart, decent, wise, kind, or prudent, right? It's not. And so what we did was we put our thumb on the scale, and for about 30 years triggered this skills gap, which is why we got 10 million open jobs.
Did
now
you
that
go to college?
Require. Yeah, I did.
Where'd
and
you go?
I went to Essex Community College, and then I worked, and then I went for a couple of years at Towson University.
Sure, Baltimore.
Got a BS in communications, cost me $12,500 for everything, both schools. Same piece of paper today, same course load, same schools, $92,000.
Tufts is 95, Wellesley is 92, Brown is 91, Yale is 90.
Per year.
Okay?
Per year. So you're getting close to $500,000 for a credential. A degree, a diploma, or as I like to call them, a receipt. Because those pieces of paper no longer confer the wisdom or the knowledge that you supposedly accumulated while you were there. It might, but, you know, this inflation thing is really in the news in every way. But the inflation no one's talking about is the credential inflation. Like in 1955... if you graduated from Harvard, the average GPA was 2.55.
Gotcha.
Today, it's 3.98. So if you're an employer, you might get the best and the brightest. You might get a curious young man or woman who shows up early and stays late and wants to apply all that newfound wisdom in a way that's efficacious to all parties. Or you might get some legacy who just kind of coasted through and had a pretty good time in Belize. Or you might – who right. knows what you're going to get? 3.9 – are they really that much smarter today?
Mike, that is true. Some desperate housewife's kid who pretended to be a rower. That might be the person you hire, no pun intended. But also, even to get into school, they go, you don't worry about class rank. It hurts their feelings if you're low. And don't worry about SATs. Well, how are you judging who the best student is?
Look, I don't
are
know.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know. I'm currently in a bit of a little imbroglio on social media because Harvard, in a couple of days ago, talked about their affinity groups and the affinity celebrations. And I said, look, why are we celebrating? Why are we celebrating things we can't control? Why aren't we celebrating work ethic?
How about where we get your scholarship application?
MicroWorks.org, $1 million standing by. Go get some.
Same outfit for One Nation. You're going to wear the same thing on Saturday night?
It's the only shirt I have, brother.
All right. It's good enough for me. I'm not judging. We got to get this guy a clothing deal. Come on, Pete.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I think what he's doing is a mistake. What I'm calling for is for the Israelis to just call for a ceasefire, allow for the next 6-8 weeks total access to all food and medicine going into the country. And it's tied to the hostages. There are a number of hostages that are being held by Hamas.
The president of the United States seems to be suddenly worried about Michigan and Minnesota, in my view, and not worried about our number one ally. It is getting ugly in Gaza. That is one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why Israel never wanted to go in there. That's why Sharon gave it away. He said, you guys keep it. You'll have plenty of money to make it a fantastic place to live. Instead, they decide to make an underground city full of weapons, and leave the Palestinian people to live in squalor. And after the October 7th attacks, it was obvious Israel had to answer in a holistic way that ends this threat forever. The president doesn't seem to understand that. And to his credit, to his defense, not many other people do. Yuval David does, an Emmy Award-winning actor, host, director, and filmmaker who has won over 100 international film festival awards and joins us now. Yuval David, welcome.
Thank you for having me in your studio. It's an honor to be sitting here as we fight to inform the masses of facts, because we're in a battle of facts where people are disputing facts and forcing facts to fit their opinions, as opposed to letting facts create and form their opinions.
Where were you October 7th?
That's when my deep trauma began. I was in Washington, D.C., opened up my phone and started to see a barrage of WhatsApp messages from people I knew who were calling out for help, for people who were looking for loved ones, wondering where they were. And that's when we started to find out what happened to people I know and to loved ones of my dear friends and colleagues.
And you knew the problem was Hamas. They wanted this fight. And the IDF gave them the fight. In a matter of weeks, they were inside the most dense population you'll ever have. And as they make their way through, world opinion begins to wane because Hamas publicity arm talked about how many casualties. And there are casualties that nobody wanted. Those are people that aren't being aimed at, unlike Hamas, who goes for civilians.
Right.
When the IDF, if they kill somebody innocent, that is never the intention.
Not at all. So these false claims of genocide, as if Israel is trying to commit genocide, is so wrong and is flipping the tables, because it is Hamas in their own charter that is claiming and has claimed since they've been around that they want to kill as many Jews as possible, then hunt Jews down, find them behind every rock and tree and kill them there. That's their own words.
So we are looking now at a president of the United States, and I was looking at Israeli television last night. People want to talk about an election and Netanyahu's unpopularity, and okay, but no one disagrees with the way he's conducting the war. People aren't pushing back in the way they conducted the war. Yeah, they want the hostages back.
Right.
Yesterday, got it.
Well,
but you guys, would you say it's a Benny Gantz would be different?
I think the main issue that is interesting now, if you look at the political spectrum and the political situation in Israel, is that even the left-leaning progressive liberal people are understanding what a danger Hamas is and that we have to be at war. We did not choose to be at war. The war was forced upon us, and all of us need to fight. One of the facts is the kibbutzim, the communities that were most heavily affected in the south of Israel, were the liberal kibbutzim, people who helped Palestinian people, people who helped Gazans. And it is those same Gazans who came and slaughtered them, who raped them, who abducted them. There are still 133 hostages held. By the way, some of those hostages are American citizens. As an American, I don't understand how the U.S. hasn't gone in there to rescue our American citizens.
Right. They never was brought up. And now we're talking about hostages, but we're talking about swaps. Now you're talking about 40 hostages coming back for 900. This is what we presented to 900 prisoners,
right?
Hamas members, Palestinians, and they'll return 40 of the 130 whose names we don't know. And they want a ceasefire on top of that. And Hamas doesn't want the deal. They think they could do a better deal.
That's what Hamas has been doing for more than 6 months now. Hamas was the one that broke the ceasefire that we had on October 6th. They continue to reject the offers that Israel is offering. Here's the difference between the two sides, let's call it, from Hamas and Israel. Israel is fighting for life. Hamas is fighting for death. Those are two completely different ideologies and approaches. So how are we supposed to fight a terrorist organization? By the way, it's important to note that amongst the people who attacked Israel on October 7th were Gaza civilians. It wasn't just Hamas. It was also Palestinian Islamic Jihad. How do we fight against an ideology?
How about the fact that at least 14 members of the UN Chief Aid Service, UNRWA, also right. involved in that? And they say, well, don't kill the whole organization just because 16 were part of the mass murder and abduction. It's crazy land.
And here's a question. Did UNRWA not know that they were in the same building with Hamas operatives and Hamas terrorists? Did UNRWA and all of these other UN organizations and UN schools that were built, did they never realize that there were tunnels that were being built underneath their schools and that they were storing weapons and rockets in the schools, in the mosques, in the hospitals. It's just BS. I'm struggling to not use foul language because I'm so angry and I'm so frustrated.
Could they have done a better job getting aid into Gaza?
Absolutely. There was so much money that's been poured into Gaza. But what happened? Hamas took over all of that. Hamas did not build
500 miles of tunnels.
Exactly. Longer than the London Underground. 500 miles of tunnels underneath Gaza. Money that could have gone to the civilians. Gaza could have been a resort town. It could have been a fabulous high-tech area. It could have been a place. It's a beautiful part of the world. But Hamas destroyed it. We are all at war with Hamas.
By the way, Yuval David is here, Emmy Award-winning actor, host, director, filmmaker, who has 100 international film festival awards. But now you're going to bat for Israel. How many times have you been there?
As an Israeli-American, I'm a dual citizen. I've been there more times than I can count. I was raised spending summers and winters in Israel. My parents are Israeli, and the rest of my family's in Israel. I was just in Israel for most of March. I was there for December and January. I'm going back and forth constantly. In Israel, I advocate on behalf of American Jewry and American-Israeli relations. In the U.S., I advocate on behalf of Israeli-American relations and on behalf of Jewish Americans. We have this massive battle, and our relationship is so important. So, yeah, I go back and forth to Israel regularly. And this last trip, sitting down and meeting with wounded soldiers, people who've lost their legs, people who are teenagers and early 20-year-olds, IDF, meeting with the families of hostages who are still held, who they don't know what's going on with their daughters, with their sons, with their parents, with their grandparents. The amount of trauma that we are facing is so immense. Yet I still feel safer as a Jew in Israel than I do here as a Jew in America.
Why?
Yesterday, when I was walking, I had a speaking engagement yesterday, and as I was walking down the street with all of these jewelry thing that I wear,
Jewish
with
stars.
Magen David and Jewish stars around my neck, this group of teenagers started yelling at me. They're like, a Jew, pretending to sneeze. I should not feel unsafe to be a Jew in
Have
America.
Have you ever had that before over this last?
Constantly. I had 4 phone calls from the FBI warning me that I'm being listed by Islamist groups, by radical Antifa groups, by white supremacist groups as a prominent American Jew, whatever that means. Fortunately, the list that I saw was alphabetical, and Yuval is Y, so it's towards the bottom of the list. So these stupid losers who are looking at the lists, hopefully they'll get tired by the time they get to the bottom of the list.
And now you have a situation where we hear this in Dearborn, Michigan. Let's listen.
And this is why Imam Khomeini, who declared the International Day of Quds, this is why he would say to pour all of your all of your chants and all of your shouts upon the head of America.
Death to America.
Death
in
to
Dearborn,
America.
Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
And this guy's done the same thing in 2021. He's done it before.
How is that acceptable? Look, I support freedom of speech. I fight for it. I believe in people's right to protest and to demonstrate. But when they are speaking and calling out death to America and actually calling for violence, we have to do something. So where's the American public? Where's the American leadership condemning this kind of behavior? We've seen it before in history. First they come for the Jews, then they come for everybody else. We are at war with radical Islam, and they have been winning battle after battle after battle. It's going to get worse, mark my words.
Are you surprised the way President Biden seems to have caved?
Am I surprised? No. Am I shocked? Yes. Elections are coming up. I think that the Biden administration, the Democratic Party, are trying to win the votes of people they think might not go and vote. So they're trying to give them little bits of information. Am I completely pleased with the Biden administration? No. Am I completely pleased with the Democratic Party? Absolutely not. There are people who should not be in the Democratic Party because they espouse racist sentiments.
How is that? How is Hollywood in the acting community?
Really? How is Hollywood? We are seeing the silent majority, the people who rose up about so many other issues, issues that they don't really know much about, but those hashtags were really popular. People are not rising up to condemn anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is at an all-time high, at least during my lifetime here in America. Where's the condemnation of that? How is it allowed for people to say things against Jewish people so publicly? whenever we see, we've heard this canary in the coal mine expression all the time. When there's a rise in anti-Semitism, it's a canary in the coal mine for worse things to come. Well, you know what? The canary's dead. The coal mine has blown up because it was built by Hamas and terrorist groups. It is in our country. People like you just showed on in Dearborn, Michigan, are calling out for death to America at these supposed pro-Palestinian rallies and riots and demonstrations. What is so pro-Palestinian? They're calling out against for things against Jews, against Israel, against America, against democracy. They're calling for an end of the West, was just at a recent rally. What does an end to the West even mean?
They want to see a divide between the U.S. and Israel, because you can't get rid of Israel if the U.S. alliance is tight with the U.S. So create a fracture, and then we'll be out of the Middle East and Israel will be gone. The other thing to keep in mind, too, that you mentioned when you walked in is you just got banned from TikTok.
I know. I have received so many messages from social media influencers I know saying, gosh, Yuval, we're so sorry to hear that you were banned from TikTok. You must feel horrible. The truth is, I don't feel that horrible. I think TikTok is a cesspool. TikTok has been a very dangerous example of how these social media algorithms have been affecting society and influencing society. But the truth is, we are the people who affect the algorithms. We need to take ownership of social media as a way to disseminate information and share the facts and not let these algorithms affect us. But the fact is, since the 1960s, there have been implementation of Qatari money, Iranian money, different terrorist organizations that started to infiltrate the civil rights, social justice, and human rights movements in order to manipulate and brainwash and create useful idiots. Social media has now become a platform for these useful idiots to share what they think is a popular hashtag without knowing more than a headline. Social media is a dangerous place.
No joke. And we have to ban TikTok in particular. Do you think there's going to be any pro-Taiwan stories on TikTok?
Oh, my gosh.
Do you think there's going to be any pro-Israeli stories on TikTok?
Do you know what I can't tell you? Because I'm banned from TikTok. All I can tell you
is I'm not on it. So.
Good for you. It's a wonderful thing. But you can find me on Instagram and X and all of these other platforms, because I do believe in the importance of these platforms. And for people who do want to share the values that they believe in, to utilize these platforms to do what is right, it is up to all of us. It is the American way to support our people and share the values that we care about. And you know what? I actually brought this for you, because I've been wearing these things around my necks all the time.
Which
this,
are?
This is a necklace that says, "Bring them home now. We still have 133 hostages who are being held." So we all have to be these walking billboards. Brian, everything you do is informing people, is empowering your audience, and affecting Americans to wake up, to take action, to know what they're talking about, and to be informed so we can create this brighter future.
And
so
that's what this is about. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'll definitely wear it. Number two is on the hostage situation. There's 130, but yet they could only account for 40.
Which is so heartbreaking when that news came out yesterday.
Who are the 40?
Who are the 40?
What happened to the others?
Were they brushing their teeth? Were they raped like other hostages? And especially the women and men who've been talking about sexual abuse that they faced while they were hostages, the hostages that were lucky enough to have been released in exchange for Palestinian terrorists. The stories that they have shared and the intimate stories that they shared with me in one-on-one conversations, I feel like I'm carrying all of this trauma, and I'm not the one who went through what they went through. They raped women. They raped girls as young as eight. I spoke to an eight-year-old girl who was raped by 12 men throughout the course of a week. I spoke to a man who's a father of three children who was raped four times because they wanted to emasculate him to prove that they are controlling the Yahud, controlling the Jew. Rape is there is no justification for rape, yet we see these riots and demonstrations and people who are taking over public forums across the United States talking about free Palestine. Free Palestine from what? From
right.
Democracy? From it should be free Palestine from Hamas.
Well, I'll tell you, something's going to be happening, because we're getting more and more reports about Iran trying to respond to the takeout of their leaders, these commanders over in Damascus. They never attack directly. It's always through proxies. Let's see if things change, because Israel is ready for a response. Yuval, David, thanks so much. If you want to follow him on every place except TikTok, at Yuval, Y-U-V-A-L, David, at, obviously, where we can find you. Instagram, Facebook?
X. YouTube.
Yeah.
Basically everywhere. Yuval David all over. Other
Try
than TikTok.
Truth Social. I don't think they'll ban you.
I am on Truth Social. I don't think that they'll ban me on Truth Social.
Absolutely. You have a message that people want to support. Thanks, Yuval.
Thank you, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Would you call it a crisis at the southern border?
Yes, I wouldn't. As a matter of fact, I work every single day with the men and women in the Department of Homeland Security to only strengthen the security of our southern border as well as the northern border. And we deploy personnel from different parts of our department whenever the situation so warrants and the situation at the border so warrants.
That's his Mayorkas saying the most astounding thing you wouldn't have thought possible a year and a half, even though we know it was the fact. And that is that there's a crisis at the border. And can we add, too, that there's MSNBC tape, and I'll dig it up, of him bragging 6 months into the administration that we have reversed so many Donald Trump policies at the border that they lost count and they were basically giving a verbal high five. Now they doubt. They said, well, we inherited a mess and that's what. No, no, you didn't inherit a mess. You actually inherited a controlled situation coming out of the pandemic, and you decided that come one, come all. And now it is so overwhelming, you're going to start executing executive orders that you said was impossible because you have no choice, because it is infecting 50 to 100 major cities. It's overrunning budgets. Crime is running rampant for illegal immigrants who don't want to come here because they need a better life. A lot of them are coming here because they want to wreak havoc. Criminals letting out of Venezuelan prisons, and the president's not putting down all immigrants. He's not putting out all Hispanics. He's saying the criminals who tell you they are in gangs and neck tattoos actually say what gang they're in. That's what he's talking about. Don't forget One Nation Saturday night. Don't forget April 27th in Henderson, Nevada. Brian Kilmeade on stage.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.